happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum, and I am joined today by
Chris Cooper, filling in for Ann Northrup.
Welcome, Chris. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Andy.
Birding season over?
Birding season is pretty much wrapped up. Yes, so I can be human again.
Okay. And we can wish you all a happy LGBTQ Pride Month, or as I like to say, happy Christopher Street Liberation Month. All right. So in the news, look. We got a great federal court decision about transgender service members, judge ordering 28 of them for now being reinstated.
The White House is banning grants to pro-LGBTQ organizations and generally trying to make all grants and funding go through their political appointees.
LGBTQ candidates advance in California in the U.S. House primaries.
Republicans are piling on with every schoolyard bully insult they can come up with for James Tallarico, the Democratic nominee for the Senate in Texas.
And that includes Trump.
It does.
We told you about that censored Watertown, Wisconsin High School Symphony. Well, they're going to get another big venue to play their concert piece about the Stonewall.
And meanwhile, in New York State and New York City, they've managed not to come through with funds to help trans youth whose funds have been under assault by the federal government. Andy and I will have words about that.
What's wrong with the New York movement? Maureen Duffy, who was a pioneering lesbian writer and activist in the United Kingdom, and I say pioneering, I mean like the first out lesbian, basically, dies at the age of 92.
Meanwhile, in Russia, they're prosecuting a 13-year-old boy for LGBT propaganda and extremism.
And Ghana is following the example of places like Uganda and passed a bill making it a crime to identify as gay.
All right. Get ready to unblock your ears because you're hearing me correctly. Louisiana. Yes, Louisiana. has reformed its HIV criminalization law. And Florida, however, has actually also good news from Florida. It's reversed its HIV and AIDS cuts. I know. Unplug your ears. You heard it here first.
The Tony Awards on Sunday promised to be more LGBTQ than ever, if that is possible.
And Andy will review Jerome, a new gay play, an AIDS-themed play starring Steven Spinella. And if there's time, I'll give you a few words about the new version of August Wilson's play, Joe Turner Come and Gone on Joan Turner's Come and Gone on Broadway.
Eager to hear your review. I'm sorry I didn't get to see it. I'm sorry I didn't get invited to see it. So, happy Pride Month. The commemorative marches and parades are in full swing. Here's a pic from the 10th annual Brighton Beach Pride in Brooklyn, there in the shadow of Coney Island amusements and in the heart of the Russian community in Brighton, organized by LGBTQ Russian emigres and the group Caravan. You might notice on the picture there on the left, there's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, and her wife there in the center, Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum, and the parade co-founder, Yelena Goltzman.
And it's particularly hard for that Pride to keep going because so many in the community are immigrants and they fear for their status under the current regime.
Sure. That's why people go out and march in solidarity with them. And veteran activist Rick Landman was with them. All right. So I have never heard of this, but in East Central, in Pine City, Minnesota, in Voyagers Park, they dedicated a plaque to the East Central Purple, the East Purple Circle, Central Circle dedicated a plaque. This was the first rural Pride event in 2005 that they're commemorating. If you have, if somebody out there wants to say you did one earlier, let us know. And they celebrated this anniversary with a modest picnic in the park. All right. 100 people came out for that, and Pine City has a gay mayor.
There you go. You know, Minnesota can be a great place to live. Doing a quick roundup of prides.
Well, how about Kansas?
Okay, you want to go to Kansas?
Well, just that Laura Kelly, the governor there, signed a proclamation of Gilbert Baker Day on June 2nd. You gave me this story.
I did.
For the creator of the rainbow flag, I did not know that Gilbert was from Parsons, Kansas.
I didn't know that either because I always saw him in the East Village every year for the drag march.
They're having the ceremony and they realize they don't have a flag. So the governor goes into her office and finds a flag and a book called No Place Like Home, Lessons in Activism from LGBTQ Canvas with rainbow stripes on the cover.
And on a personal note, I have to say I always favor the rainbow flag and not the Progress Pride flag, just because to me, the rainbow is inclusive already of everybody, and its graphic simplicity is so beautiful. And the Progress Pride flag is actually, I think, a registered trademark by some guy.
There are issues it, but Gilbert and I, too, would say let 1,000 flags bloom.
Yeah, that's just my personal choice is the original rainbow flag. Doing
You're
a quick
traditionalist.
Round. I am. A quick roundup of prides in Connecticut, Ned Lamont, Illinois' Governor J.B. Pritzker, Kentucky's Andy Beshear, Maine's Janet Mills, Michigan's Gretchen Whitmer, New York's Kathy Hochul, North Carolina's Josh Stein, a Democrat, Rhode Island's Dan McKee, Wisconsin's Tony Evers, and in Guam, Governor Lourdes Loane Guerrero. And also the U.S. Conference of Mayors, Google with a disco ball doodle, and Sesame Street all celebrated Pride Month, but...
Well, Guam is a bit of a surprise. We didn't get Ron DeSantis, I guess.
We did not get Ron DeSantis. However, in Utah, Governor Spencer Cox, and also in Arkansas, Sarah Huckabee Sanders both declared Fidelity Month, while Governor Kay Ivey...
Fidelity to what? It would be nice if it were fidelity to the Constitution.
While Governor Kay Ivey in Alabama declared Strong Families Month, and in Tennessee, Governor Bill Lee declared Nuclear Family Month, which was echoed in a since-deleted post by Tennessee's U.S. House Rep. Andy Ogles, who also added in that tweet, homosexuality has no place in America. He deleted it when he got pushback from George Santos. We can't get rid of that guy.
Anyway. He's being investigated by the DOJ.
Yeah, for insider trading. We'll see where that goes.
Well, so let pride bloom everywhere. So in a move that, so the Trump administration policy that illegally banned transgender troops from military service, right? That has been overturned by a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals. And on different grounds from the last case that was decided on this, which also overturned it, but then the Supreme Court let it go into effect, because they're saying, Roger Wilkins, the judge, said, it appears to be driven by the bare desire to harm a politically unpopular group, persons who identify as transgender. It's animus, and you can't base things, which obviously Hegseth does, on hate.
So the way they've structured the ruling, it doesn't allow them to boot existing service members who are trans.
Or at least 28 of them.
But it does allow them to prevent enlistment of, for now, further trans service members. And Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has vowed to appeal this all the way to the Supreme Court.
Well, he's not just vowing, but he's disproportionately targeting women and people of color in the military for appointments for,
And this isn't his first time sticking his fingers in. But what he's done is he has blocked the promotions of 9 Navy officers who had been selected by a board of senior Navy admirals. And this is apparently extraordinarily unusual. There are actually rules governing promotions so that they remain, neutral. And Pete Hegseth doesn't care because he's got an agenda, which is to make
sure. Because he is a scumbag. Well, we're allowed to say that here, because even on free speech. He is one of the worst people in the world.
They think this is their way to make it seem like we're fighting DEI. Yep.
Well, and of course, denying themselves the service of so many valuable people. The White House is now going to exert more control over all government grants, putting them in the hands of political people who will make sure whoever gets a grant, this is a 400-page blueprint for this, whoever gets a grant has to align with the goals of the administration And one of the issues is that you can't give money to groups that deny the biological reality of sex or the sex binary in humans. It also, of course, they're going after DEI and those things.
If I remember correctly, this scheme of theirs, which is to sort of shift where the approval for the grants comes from, and therefore it will fall under political appointees, that this is the brainchild of the guy who came up with Project 2025.
Yes.
So he is really wreaking serious damage to our country.
And the chief executive of the American Public Health Association said it could devastate innovation, science, and research in the United States. We're just – I mean, everything he does is about essentially killing off the United States. You think we'd want to celebrate after 250 years. We survived that long, but we're not going to survive much longer.
Listen,
the way things are going.
The Trump presidency may be the greatest secret op of Putin ever devised.
Sure. And the guy you put in for the intelligence,
oh, my goodness. The mortgage guy. And in charge of intelligence.
And even the Republicans are rebelling at that, but it's an interim appointment, so we can do it right through the elections. And his whole purpose is just to gather dirt on Trump's enemies while the United States remains undefended.
So when I call him the mortgage guy, for those who don't understand, he is still in charge of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So he's approving, you know, the mortgage process. He weaponized that to go after people like Letitia James. He's the one who came up with the whole scheme of, oh, let's charge Letitia James with mortgage fraud.
Yes.
Which, of course, half the people in the administration had done
half of his own relatives.
Had done exactly the same thing. So it was completely fabricated. So he's, for his loyalty to Trump, he has now been put in charge of national intelligence when he has no experience whatsoever. Who's going to pay the price? Us in New York. Because, you know, who's the biggest target in the country for terrorism? It's insane. Sorry. We're getting agitated.
There was a judge who ordered Trump's name off the Kennedy Center, and his name was Chris Cooper.
Yes.
He was Christopher Cooper. You're Christian Cooper.
That's okay. I'll claim him.
Trump's lawsuit against the IRS that he settled with himself. Of course, they say they're abandoning the payoffs to his friends. But it also involves a $100 million gift to the Trump family, no more audits. But it has been reopened by a federal judge because it's self-dealing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Before we leave Washington and talk about election news, I just wanted to mention Freedom 250 concert in D.C.
Yeah, which we've got a lot of cancellations, including who is it?
Brett Michaels. Viewers, please pardon my ignorance. I have no idea who the guy is, but whoever he is, he's not coming.
He's Poison. That's his group.
Oh, okay. Well, it's collapsing. There's been several pullouts.
Look at all the cancellations. Well, so the whole thing has been canceled now.
Well, yes. But still in at the time, before they pulled the plug on the whole thing, were Vanilla Ice and half of lip-syncing Milli Vanilli. So, it was going to be a real barnstormer kind of concert.
So now Trump is going to give us what he calls the number one attraction anywhere in the world himself. It's just going to be a Trump rally.
I'm not even sure if they're still sticking with that, but we'll see.
Okay. By the way, Elon Musk has confirmed that he bought Twitter to get back at his trans daughter, that he wanted to use it to go after Vivian Jenna Wilson. Her name.
Well, apparently what had happened is that there was some anti-trans post on Twitter that got a community note. Because it violated the policies. So Elon Musk didn't want to have that happening anymore. So that's why he bought Twitter.
He said that Vivian, his daughter, who is estranged from him, obviously, was murdered by the woke mind virus, and now it will die along with our democracy. Mm. All right, election news.
All right, so first of all, in California, in a place I spend a lot of time these days, Palm Springs, is included in this district. Marnie Von Wolpert won the Democratic primary for what used to be Daryl Issa's seat. Daryl Issa is a monster, very anti-gay. He is retiring because his new district doesn't give him a snowball's chance in hell of winning.
You put that picture up of Marnie and Jim Desmond, who was the second place. Excuse me, he's first place. He's a Republican, and he got 42% of the vote. She got 20% of the vote, but she bested all the Democrats.
Right. So presumably now the rest of the Democratic vote will funnel to her.
Would be 58% of the vote.
Sure. So that's the hope.
So congratulations to Marnie. In San Francisco, in the race for Nancy Pelosi's seat, out Scott Wiener came out on top with 41%, and the Pelosi-endorsed Connie Chan was second with 29%. They have to face off in November.
Meanwhile, out gay Robert Garcia of Long Beach will likely now have the reactionary anti-LGBTQ town of Huntington Beach in his district. That's a town that bans the display of pride flags. He got 52% of the vote in his open primary.
And he will face off with a Republican in November. Excuse me. All right. In Iowa, in the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate, Zach Walls, who's a state senator who gained fame at 19 when he delivered a speech to Iowa State House about his experience being raised by lesbian mothers.
I remember that speech.
Very famous. But he lost pretty big to State Representative Josh Turek, Turek, the Democratic establishment pick.
And that's okay. It's a good start for Zach. He just needs to keep plugging at it. Meanwhile, in Texas. All right. So we all know that James Tallarico became the Democratic nominee. Well, what we also now know is that Ken Paxton, who our viewers know all too well for all his monstrous deeds, became the Republican nominee, and that has the Republicans scared because they gave away an also conservative incumbent Republican senator for this guy who's so far to the right. People are like, you know, what's going to happen here?
And it's a tight race.
So what do? They pile on with schoolyard bully insults. So, for example, Paxton quickly said that James Tallarico was too low T for Texas. Voldemort guy in the administration.
Stephen Miller.
Yes. Stephen Miller said that he was transgender, the first transgender nominee
in Texas. Calling him Tofu Tallarico, Six Gender Jimmy, James Tallarico, which has led the Tallarico campaign to put Tallarico T-shirts on. It reminds me of lesbian Avengers when they were accused of being that back in the day. So that's the way they're going to go with this.
But Tallarico had a great response, and I want to find it exactly so I can read it to you. Let's see if I can get it.
While you're doing that, he did walk back some of his remarks in a TV interview. He said some of his past statements had missed the mark or been cringy. I know there are two sexes, men and women, he said. I also know there's a small percentage of people who have these chromosomal abnormalities. That's not a good way to put it.
No, it isn't.
And I believe they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect.
Well, what he did say in response to the whole, oh, my God, you're a vegan or whatever, which he isn't. He said, I'm an eighth generation Texan. I've been eating barbecue since before Ken Paxton's first indictment.
Very good. Trump seems to believe that Tallarico actually is transgender. He calls him this transgender, this guy running in Texas. He wears a mask all the time. He's a disaster. I think Ken Paxton's going to destroy him. Well, no matter who wins, Republicans are going to have to spend a lot of money if they want to get Ken Paxton elected.
Which is great because it siphons their ability to spend the money elsewhere in other states.
All right. Six California families are asking a federal court to stop the Trump administration's DOJ from using a grand jury subpoena issued 1,500 miles away in Texas to seize the children's confidential medical records from a hospital in Stanford. It goes on and on, and there's a bunch of lawsuits around this fishing expedition that the administration is on, using courts that are thousands of miles away.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, they had tried some other means to get this and got rebuffed. Yeah. And so now the subpoena is a way to try and go around that. And it's really malicious.
We all have to be concerned about this, that they can get your records, I mean, which are supposed to be confidential.
All right. Well, also, while we're talking about trans news, in Mississippi, there was a young trans man who became the salutatorian at his high school graduation. He'd been misgendered and deadnamed by the school. They photoshopped his mustache, allegedly.
Well, that is him on the left there.
Yes. And they photoshopped his mustache, allegedly, to make him look more feminine in his yearbook photo. I had to endure being called young lady. And yet he's still shown and rose to become the salutatorian of his high school. And one of the things he said was, quite graciously, "I hold no grudge against those who were so quick to criticize me because I know it's not the desired feeling. We as people tend to groove others into boxes, and our feelings reflect that bias even if we don't realize it." So good for you, Jonas Hole. That's his name.
They were unbelievably cruel to him. All right. New York. Now, this is New York. We got nothing to brag about. The NYCLU says that the state budget just passed fails to meet the moment for trans New Yorkers. Now, we know all these funds are getting cut off from the Trump administration to do trans care, or they're forbidding people to do it. And the state and the city need to come through with the funding to get it done. And it's not getting done in New York.
Right. And a lot of it is just outright bullying tactics because it doesn't have the force of law. A lot of it are executive orders from Trump where he's saying, oh, you know, we'll cut off funds if you continue to provide gender-affirming care. Now, that can be fought in court and probably quite successfully, but everyone's scared. They don't want to be caught up in court cases.
They shouldn't be scared in New York, and it's disgraceful. Right. And while running for office, Mayor Mamdani made a pledge, if elected, he would immediately commit $65 million in the budget to expand access to gender-affirming care, particularly for young people, and he is not doing that. He's saying there's $15 million in the current budget to maybe do it, but I'm still not getting – and I've written to the press office, where are trans youth supposed to go for services now that a lot of the private hospitals have cut it off? You have city hospitals. Are you doing it? They're not answering the question.
All right. So now maybe I'm a little bit too much of a Mamdani fan.
I'm a Mamdani fan as well.
But I'm cutting him a little slack because when he made that campaign promise of $65 million for trans care – he was not in office yet. Now he's in office, and lo and behold, he discovers that his predecessor has left – let me finish. His predecessor has left him a multi-billion dollar deficit in the city budget, which he had to close. He managed to close it without cutting city services. That's pretty phenomenal, but it doesn't leave a lot of discretionary money.
He expanded city services. He's opening up childcare for everybody. That's something he's doing. So when he wants to do something, when they want to do something, they find the money. And then they ask Albany for the money. And he gets together with the governor, who should also be behind this, and they should do this. This is urgent. These people are without care. You know, I mean, come on.
There you have it.
I mean, a black-led trans advocacy organization, Sayin Dorsho, said, "I need the mayor to put his money where his mouth is." And
I don't know. I guess I'm more cutting in more slack because of the budget realities. But you know,
but again, I'm saying whenever they want to do something, they do it. They find the money. They always do. Even whatever. All right. So let me get past this. He was on the radio talking about this. You talked about Jonas Hall, who is the salutatorian in Mississippi.
Yeah. And
we've been telling you about this Watertown, Wisconsin high school symphony band, right? The Wind Symphony. And they were banned by their school board from doing a 4.5-minute orchestral piece in honor of Marsha P. Johnson on the Stonewall. And it was performed at a church last week.
Well, then the Minocqua Brewing Company stepped in and said, hey, you know what? We want you to play the concert in its entirety in our outdoor beer garden. word got out, and they had to move it to someplace bigger to accommodate people, so they moved it to their parking lot, and then word got out again, and it became so big they've had to do it now in the Madison, Wisconsin's Barrymore Theater. So these kids are going to get to perform this concert yet again and bring more attention to it when it would have gone under the radar entirely.
Exactly. The school board has done more to draw attention to Marsha P. Johnson and the Stonewall Rebellion, which they have mischaracterized. But there.
All right. Well, while we're on trans issues, we should talk about that a trans man was hired to play on a women's soccer team.
What?
Right? You know, in Minnesota, the Minnesota Aurora FC football club has signed Isaac Ranson, a transgender man and former Cal State Fullerton goalkeeper. Now, this is, again, a women's soccer team. Ranson has is the first out transgender player in Aurora's history, and Aurora's team response has been totally supportive. The club welcomed him, supported him, and said it believes everyone deserves the chance to play. Now, this, of course, is, you know, not what anti-trans activists want to see. They are, you know, they, if they're saying, well, we want people to play on the team that they from the gender they were assigned at birth, well, that's what's happening here.
Exactly.
But, you know, they just don't want to see transgender people playing at all, because they'll always come up with some argument for why it's unfair to everybody else. So, you know, this will not make them happy, but tough.
All right. In the Diocese of East Carolina, they installed the first out lesbian bishop in the South. Her name is the Reverend Sarah Fisher. She's married to the Reverend Mandy Brady, and she's now in charge of 66 North Carolina parishes and 2 college campus ministries.
I serve a very purple congregation, she said. We are not unanimous in politics or in how much noise children should make in church or what brand of coffee to serve. We are united in our desire to see, know, and serve the risen Christ.
She loves the Lord.
There you go.
All right. But the company, Patagonia, does not like the drag queen, Patagonia,
who claims that she took her name from the region in South America known as Patagonia.
Okay. So, but they are suing the drag queen Patagonia and environmental activists for trademark infringement, saying she's moved away from discreet use of her persona to engage in activism and transformed it into a commercial enterprise. And Patty saying, you're trying to erase an activist.
Well, apparently they had some agreement in 2022 between them she would not try to market things, and she's actually filed for some trademark patents so that she could market some things. So, you know, it's a little hard to tell exactly who's right, who's wrong here. But I will say I admire Patagonia for her environmental activism. I mean, all over the place and really pushing against climate change and a whole bunch of other things and doing it in a way that engages a lot of people.
Patty has more than 1.8 million followers on Instagram and nearly 900,000 on TikTok. But the company, Patagonia, wants her to agree to remove the trademark application, cease using our mountain landscape logo, and stop the sale and promotion of apparel and other products as Patagonia. So
this reminds me of when what is now GLAAD, G-L-A-A-D, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation.
You were on the board.
Yes.
Years ago.
And back when it started, we were originally going to call ourselves the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation.
Yes.
Anti-Defamation League. Sorry.
Yes.
The Gay and Lesbian Anti-Defamation League. And the ADL, which is a Jewish organization, said, you can't do that.
I stopped you.
People try to protect their trademark.
They do. All right. We told you about that horrible murder of O'Shea Sibley in Brooklyn in 2023. And so the trial of the alleged perpetrator, Dmitry Popov, who's now 20, is on. And Popov is trying to say, you know, I felt threatened. I was defending myself. And he's been picked apart by the DA in the case.
He's denying having made any homophobic slurs during the assault, during the murder, even though I think it's 6 different witnesses testified to the fact that he made homophobic comments during the attack.
Calling effing faggots and using the N-word. He denies this. So is that your testimony that they all lied and you're the only one telling the truth? And Popov said, yes.
Now, this case goes back to July, or the incident goes back to July 2023. It's finally coming to trial, and hopefully we will finally get the resolution that O'Shea Sibley and his loved ones deserve.
The prosecutor said, what did you do with your cell phone? Mm. He says, I threw it out. So you got rid of the evidence, did you? He says, correct. All right. More cruelty in South Carolina. Governor Henry McMaster, we got a picture of him there, has signed the Student Physical Privacy Act, requiring public schools and universities across the state to segregate bathrooms and locker rooms, changing spaces, and some student housing based on sex assigned at birth. The language effectively opens the door for schools to isolate transgender students in outdoor portable toilets.
Yeah, porta potties for transgender students and regular bathrooms for everyone else. I find that photo unfortunate because he's so well lit and so smiling and so happy, you know, and it's appalling for someone who's doing this to other people.
60 Minutes has been murdered, as Scott Pelley said, and you've all heard that news, and he has been fired for standing up to the new Barry Weiss appointed director of the program. But before that, it was a journalist named 18 years old, Santiago Campos, who was given an award by CBS News for the Mike Wallace Award. It was a former 60 Minutes correspondent. And here's what this kid had to say.
While I want to thank CBS News for funding this generous gift towards my education, I want to also acknowledge how the recent direction of the outlet stains the legacy of Mike Wallace, the namesake of this scholarship. As corporate elites take hold, over the very pipes through which our information flows, journalism that serves the people becomes increasingly harder to come by, yet ever more crucial. And what the people want is the truth. So if at any time you hesitate to utter the word genocide or remain silent in the face of blatant lies, remember to ask yourself, who is this for? I hope you choose us. Thank you.
Bravo. And right after that, Scott Pelley, who handed him the award, wrapped him in an embrace and said, God, we need young people like you behind us. Well, you're gone now, Scott. I think you all over there at 60 Minutes who have any integrity need to go off and start your own show. We did.
I love the reaction in that clip. When they cut to the audience and there's a woman close up on the right whose face is like, ooh, girl, you going there?
What happens when you speak the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, he won the award for reporting on immigrant enforcement and fear tearing through his community.
Now, I want to drag us back to crime news for just a second. We moved away a little too quickly because back here in New York City, it took 3 years, but they finally have a suspect who allegedly gay-bashed a stranger on the subway. He's been caught. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg announced that this 26-year-old Tavon Thompson has been indicted for that anti-gay assault on a 27-year-old person in a West Harlem subway station. Hopefully he will be brought to justice now.
By the way, of course, a bunch of other people were fired at 60 Minutes as well before Scott Pelley. But now Barry Weiss, this horror show, and she happens to be a lesbian, is eyeing right-wing podcaster Joe Rogan for the show. All right. Now, there's a controversy in New York. It's been going on for a long time. We were all pretty upset when the city council, under Christine Quinn, named the Queensborough Bridge for Ed Koch.
Christine Quinn, out lesbian.
Yes. She wanted his endorsement when she ran for mayor. She lost. So Alan Roscoff of the Jim Owls Liberal Democratic Club has been asking candidates ever since, will you get Ed Koch's name off that bridge? He was an AIDS war criminal. He was a racist. By the way, he was a sexual predator with staff. It's all, and a lot of them said yes. Mayor Mamdani, when he was running, said yes. Also, and now doesn't want to talk about it.
Also, City Council Speaker Julie Menin, when she was campaigning for that office,
and now
said
she's
yes. She's saying she doesn't want to deal with it. Mamdani apparently is sticking to his guns and saying that it should come off.
He says it's not a priority, so they're going to bury it. And Julie Menin is not going to move it.
She's against it.
But that name should not. Let's just go back to it being the Queensboro Bridge, or as most people call it, the 59th Street Bridge. Feeling groovy. Let's just go back to that. All these naming things cause trouble.
For those who did not catch Andy's reference, Feeling Groovy is a reference to the Simon and Garfunkel song,
which is composed on 59th Street Bridge. I think it's something like that. All right.
More crime news?
Well, in Georgia, you want to?
Yeah, in Atlanta, there was a nightclub owner, a lesbian, Cheryl Canty, and she was fatally murdered by her ex-wife. This is the kind of story we don't like to have to report. But she was co-owner of Atlanta's Opium Nightclub and a well-known party promoter, she was shot dead by her ex-wife.
The story made reference to it that, according to the CDC, 44% of lesbian women report having experienced physical violence, stalking, or rape by a partner in their lifetime. That's alarming, shocking.
That is shocking. It is supposedly commensurate to what is seen in heterosexual relationships, but it still shouldn't be.
And 44% of LGBTQ plus survivors of intimate partner violence report that they've been denied shelter services when they're seeking help, something we need to correct.
Yeah. That's the great outrage, disparate reaction of the authorities to the abuse. Anyway,
disparate impact.
Thank you.
All right. International news?
Yes. Let's start with your ancestral homeland.
No, let's start with Brazil.
Okay.
We could go to Hungary, although my people were really from Romania. But they said we're Hungarian. All right. So the president of Argentina is anti-gay.
He's a jerk. But the president of Brazil is a good guy. He's a progressive.
Lula.
He's a progressive. So what did he do? He took the embassy in Buenos Aires and draped the whole thing bottom to top in a giant rainbow flag to celebrate Pride Month.
So things have gotten better in Hungary. The authorities in Budapest now have given the green light for the capital's Pride March in June. It was banned by the government last year, although everybody in protest marched anyway.
Right.
So that was under Viktor Orban. The okay comes as the European Union released more than 16 billion euros in funds that had been withheld from the Orban government because they were so bad on human rights, especially LGBTQ rights.
And I think we need to mention that, you know, before Viktor Orban got voted out and when everybody showed up for the pride anyway, they were led by the mayor of Budapest, a guy named Gergely Karashkany. And he's a great hero for doing that. In fact, he was charged for leading that protest. Nobody knows. I don't think it's been determined yet whether those charges are going to continue now that there's a new government. But regardless, he's a hero for standing up for our community at a time when it was a real bold stand to take.
Magyar, the new president, is a conservative, and he avoided the march, but he didn't criticize it either. He believes in freedom of assembly and all those kinds of things. And he is also changing the constitution to get rid of the current president, which is the president is the ceremonial office. And this guy is a right-wing nut, and he's moving to change everything.
Yeah, restoring freedom of the press, too, as I understand it.
Oh, over there. God, yes.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, in Africa, we have a different story. In slavish devotion to the legacy of colonialism, a horrific anti-LGBTQ law has just passed their parliament. It has yet to be signed by their president, and we have a photo of him. What's his name again?
John Mahana.
John Mahana. It has yet to be signed by him, but I find it hard to believe that he will find the gumption to stand up to those really powerful anti-gay forces.
The former president, Akufo-Addo, in 2024, when they passed a similar bill, did not sign it. But this guy has said he would support the bill's passage.
So let's talk about the bill a little bit, because why is it so horrific? It doesn't criminalize just the behavior. It criminalizes the identity of being LGBTQ. And it encourages your friends and neighbors to report you. And there are penalties if you don't report people for being LGBTQ. I think the only things that are comparable in Africa right now are in Uganda and parts of Nigeria, where they actually give the death penalty for being queer.
Is, they already had laws against homosexual activity, which were never enforced. You know, like our sodomy laws were always on the books, and they were rarely enforced, although they were it was a great burden having them on the books because it made us all criminals.
So, yeah, this is unfortunately what they're facing in Ghana. Again, it is not law yet, but we have to wait and see what will happen.
More than 30 of Africa's 54 countries have laws that criminalize same-sex sexual acts. Some carry lengthy jail terms of more than 10 years, and the punishment is death in Somalia, Uganda, and Mauritania. By the way, there's an international family sovereignty and values conference taking place in Ghana next week.
And isn't the Congressional Black Caucus going there?
Well, and they're urging them not to.
Yeah. Meanwhile, speaking of Africa, because some of those countries are Commonwealth countries.
By the way, funded by Russia.
Yeah. What a shock. Speaking of Africa, because some of those countries are Commonwealth countries, there was a protest in the UK against all those Commonwealth countries that still criminalize homosexuality.
And there is on the right, Sir Ian McKellen, the great actor and activist.
And on the left is Peter Tatchell, the great, great activist.
And I apologize for not knowing the name of the gentleman in the middle.
Yeah, me neither. But anyway, so they actually had sort of a march to the various Commonwealth government offices.
Yeah, they marched all around the town.
Yeah, including to Trinidad and Tobago, which, you know, they almost got rid of their sodomy laws. But then the Supreme Court said, no, you can't invalidate it on the grounds that you were trying to invalidate it. So they still have them, and I may be going down there soon. And I will go there as my full self, so they will just have
to
deal.
Good luck.
They will just have to deal.
29 Commonwealth countries still criminalize homosexuality. Now, these are British-era colonial laws. But you would think, having thrown off British colonial rule, they might. And I think that speaks to innate homophobia and bigotry.
I'm sure it's a combination of both. But
they're not doing it because they love the British. By the way, the Secretary General of the Commonwealth Secretary General is from Ghana, and she just began her tenure, and she needs to do more to get this under control. Staying in Britain, Maureen Duffy, who was a pioneering LGBTQ activist and author, has died at 92. She was the first gay woman in British public life to be open about her sexuality. She came out publicly in the 60s, made public comments before male homosexual acts were decriminalized in 1967. She wrote more than 60 works of fiction. She said, I don't write to represent gay lover characters, but because they're part of who I am and I write about myself, she was much honored.
And I should just amend what you said. 60 works of fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and plays combined, including the best-selling novel, The Microcosm. Which was set in London.
And a famous lesbian club in 1966 called Gateways. All right.
Meanwhile, in Russia.
Go ahead.
The 13-year-old kid is being prosecuted for promoting LGBTQ propaganda because he happened to share a video he found
13 online. 13 years old.
Yep. Apparently it had some gay symbols in it. He thought it was a joke. And he's being sent to reform school now because of it, where he will be re-educated because he was considered remediable.
It's Russia. Even worse than the United States. So here's a picture of Filippo Sorsonelli. He is the vestment designer for the last three popes, including the current one, including the variant. This is an openly gay man. He has a perfume line that includes a scent called Cruising Area. And but he did costumes for Benedict XVI, who was terribly anti-gay, Francis, who was a little better, and now Leo XIV. Vogue just named Pope Leo one of the 55 best-dressed people of 2025.
I don't know. I think if you collaborate with them in almost any fashion, you are not really being true to yourself.
My experience of the church has always been one of welcome. No one's ever stopped me at the threshold of a church, he says. Well, they would stop you if you tried to get married there.
All right.
If you tried to marry a man.
Are we ready for AIDS and health news?
Well, yes. On Friday, June 5th at 7 o'clock at the AIDS Memorial, they're going to have an AIDS vigil in March in New York City. I'll be there for that.
In Louisiana, they have taken steps to end HIV criminalization. It's not entirely gone, but Governor Jeff Landry signed legislation that narrows the state's HIV exposure law by limiting prosecutions to conduct that poses a substantial likelihood of transmission and by creating new protections for people living with HIV.
Do we have that video with Cleve Jones? Can we run it?
I first learned about a new disease that we now call HIV/AIDS in June 1981. By 1985, almost everyone I knew was dead or dying or caring for someone who was dying. Fear and stigma surrounded the disease, and our government failed to act. So my friends and I built a quilt to honor the lives lost and demand action. Made up of thousands of 3-foot by 6-foot panels, the AIDS quilt became the world's largest community folk art project as it traveled across the country and around the world to change attitudes about AIDS and increase calls to fund research, treatment, and care. It's been 45 years with 45 million dead, and AIDS still isn't over. We fight on for the day when a vaccine and cure are found. That struggle unites people everywhere who believe we can build a healthy nation and share our world in peace with justice.
So just a little context about that clip. That is part of a series of very short videos called 250 to 250, which talk about mostly ordinary Americans and how they have changed the direction of the country by what they did.
Are you doing one?
I'm not.
You're a big guy.
I don't know.
But that put together by Heather Cox Richardson, and Cleve is asking us all on June 5th to have actions across the country to promote health care, which, if you haven't noticed, is being taken away from you.
Well, speaking of exactly that, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is now under Trump's Health and Human Services Secretary Robert Kennedy Jr., has very sort of stealthily gotten rid of MPOX guidance that was on their website tied to Pride events. So, of course, they feel that this is more DEI and they don't want to be associated with it. And it is actually maybe completely illegal that they got rid of it because a court has previously ruled that they have to keep this information up on their website. But they're going to do it anyway.
Keep Googling. You'll find out, but you won't find out from your federal government. The NIH has terminated over 2,000 health equity grants for BIPOC, LGBTQ communities, people of color. And this, I have to read about this in The Lancet, about what's happening in the United States.
Yeah. The Lancet is a very prestigious, perhaps the most prestigious health journal in the world, but it's based out of the UK.
I should have said 2,000 grants also for LGBTQ communities. This is all Trump nonsense. Florida lawmakers have agreed to reverse some HIV/AIDS cuts. Wonders never cease. The deal restores eligibility to 400% of the federal poverty level, reverses drug restrictions imposed by the Department of Health, provides more money. How did this happen? I wish I knew, but it's good news.
I was about to ask you how that happened, and I don't know either.
I'm only the co-host of the Gay USA show. I don't know everything.
Meanwhile, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to switch to entertainment news, but if you have something else. Okay.
Yeah.
Shakespeare in the Park is a tradition here in New York City. It takes place in a place called the Delacorte Theater in the middle of Central Park. And they do, I think, two productions each summer.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and it involves this whole sort of process of waiting online for hours to try and get those free tickets because it's entirely free. It's put out by...
unless you make a big donation.
Right, unless you're some corporate donor. But this year they're doing Romeo and Juliet. And following the performances, there are apparently going to be weddings. And one of the weddings included a trans couple, Teague Hollister and Kay Wassel. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
Yes, that's right.
Yep. And they got married after the Delacorte's production of Romeo and Juliet.
That's a drawing of them that appeared in The New Yorker. They are both drag king performers, Teague as Hugh Man Race and Kay as Chevy Lace. And when it was announced that a couple was going to be married, the crowd gasped and then erupted in applause. I wasn't there. I wish I was. It sounds great. And the out gay Tony winner, Francis Jew, a J-U-E, who plays Friar Lawrence in Romeo and Juliet, legally performed the ceremony.
Now, what cracks me up is that, I mean, most of us know Romeo and Juliet is kind of sad, but I guess they're sort of trying to reclaim some joy and end on a happier note.
Well, you know,
weddings.
For a lot of a long period in the 19th century or maybe 18th century, they gave King Lear a happy ending, and it was performed that way for many, many years. But we're back to the tragedy.
Well, you know what this makes me think of? Why didn't Maria die at the end of West Side Story?
Why would she have died?
Well, because Juliet dies at the end of Romeo and Juliet.
Right. You got that right.
Yeah, so why does Maria see?
Very interesting point.
Something for our viewers to think about and chime in on.
Maybe they thought it was too much and they just didn't want to.
Well, if they didn't have her die, she wouldn't be able to say, "Is there another bullet for you? And you? Is there one for me?"
Yeah, it's a great scene. All right. Broadway's Tony Awards are on Sunday, coming to you from Radio City Music Hall. You can watch them, I hate to say it, on CBS at 8 o'clock. Lots of LGBTQ news people to watch. Going to go through these quickly. Nathan Lane, and these are the nominees. Nathan Lane in Death of a Salesman, and he's with Queen Jean. She's nominated twice for costume design for Liberation and the musical Cats the Jellicle Ball. And then there's Andre DeShields, who was nominated in Cats the Jellicle Ball. And then from Rocky Horror, you've got Luke Evans there and Stephanie Hsu, HSU from Rocky Horror. They're standing there with Rose Byrne, also nominated from Fallen Angels. From Ragtime, you've got Ben Levi Ross and Brandon Uranowitz, out gay, both in that show, nominated. And from Titanic, you've got Marla Mindell with Leighton Williams, who are nominated. They're standing there with Ty Blue, who's the show's co-writer, with the out gay Constantine Russoli and Mindell. And that's not even counting the gay directors, Joe Mantello, Death of a Salesman, Nick Heitner, Giant, Christopher Gattelli for Schmigadoon, and the costume designer Paul Tazewell for Joe's Turner Come and Gone,
which I saw last night. Interesting production. I've got to say it's not my favorite August Wilson play because it is a play written by the legendary playwright August Wilson.
Wonderful.
But August Wilson just has a remarkable way with the vernacular and immerses you sort of in the milieu of the characters. So it was an interesting production. I enjoyed it. I'd recommend it. And one of the most fun parts is that it's a largely black audience, and my people are vocal. So it's not call and response, but, you know, when things happen, people are like all over it in a sort of audible response, and that's a lot of fun.
Well, you know, they have, I believe it's a controversy in London. Sometimes they want to have blackout nights where only black people can come.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about that?
Oh, I'd have to think about that. I don't know. I think
you know?
I tend to recoil at those kind of blanket, you know,
you
hard.
Know, the black community in New York, of course, started with slavery in many cases. But when black people started, you know, integrating into New York in the early 1800s, they lived in the Village, Greenwich Village. That was their area, and they had a theater that banned white people. They you know this story?
I don't.
Because they had a sign up that said, because you do not know how to comport yourselves around people of color.
Well, I have to correct you on one thing. It wasn't the only community down in the village. There was also Seneca Village, which was around
Central Park,
that which they bulldozed to make Central Park.
Yes.
So, yes. Anyway.
And they kept getting displaced, and they ended up in Harlem, which used to be a Jewish community.
So, New York, ever-changing.
All right. I saw the play Jerome. It's a new gay and AIDS-themed play at Playwrights Horizon by John Caswell Jr., starring Steven Spinella there in the middle. And wait a minute, let me get his name. Where are you? George Bennett Watson as a there on the left as a they're a longtime gay couple in the early 1990s in a sparsely populated part of northern Arizona. And into their lives comes the handsome younger man of 53, played by Ken Barnett, and drama ensues. And it's a unique perspective on gay aging and gay relationships against the background of the AIDS crisis. Lots of humor, also a lot of heart. But I have to say, it's Playwrights Horizon, and your hearing devices there at Playwrights Horizon are not adequate. I am a person with hearing loss. Broadway does very well on this. I went to complain. They said, we don't have any money. I'm like, come on, you got to fix that.
Wow.
All right. Other notes. La Cage aux Folles with an all-black cast led by Billy Porter is at the City Center for the Encore series June 17th to 28th. Oh, Mary is coming to the National Theater in D.C., three blocks from the White House on Lincoln's birthday in February, of course. You couldn't get Ford's Theater? I guess not. And that's the news for this week.
Oh, my God. I can't believe we got through all that Pride news and everything else.
Yes. And, what are you doing for Pride? Will you be at the drag march with Ann Northrop marshalling Friday before Pride?
I always do the drag march. I live a block away from Tompkins Square Park, so it is always really super fun to go down there and see everyone muster and all the fabulous outfits. That's where I used to see Gilbert Baker every year because he was always there in some rainbow getup. And, it's a lot of fun. So, yes, I will be there for that.
I certainly intend to make it to the Queer Liberation March. Of course, our friends in Gays Against Guns are going to be grand marshals of the New York City Pride, which is the one that just sort of wanders around slowly. I'm sorry. It's the way I feel about it.
The last time I watched Pride, because I used to be like, I have to watch Pride from beginning to end.
Really?
And it took 8 hours.
8 hours.
8 hours.
No. It doesn't have to take 8 hours. The Queer Liberation March will move quickly. We'll give you more information about that. And, of course, you're having your events all across the country. It's everywhere, like we showed you in this rural area in Minnesota.
And, you know, I met my partner.
Current partner.
Yes, on the day of the Queer Liberation March. I had just finished the march, and two friends, I was exhausted. I was like, I have to go home and sleep. And they're like, no, you're coming to this afternoon midday party. And they drive me to the party.
It's a very bad day to meet people because everybody's out.
But there you go. So we go to this party, and this guy walks in as I was about to walk out because I was like, I cannot be here another second. And he's tall, dark, and handsome, and I'm like, who are you? And that's how we met.
What a beautiful story. What a beautiful Pride story. I hope you all have good ones to share. We're down to our last 10 seconds. Thanks for being with us. Chris, you'll be here next week.
I will be here next week.
And it'll be back in 2 weeks.